Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. I'm very happy to have as my guest today Ann Patchett, who's talking to us from at home in Tennessee. Her new book is State of Wonder. It's published by Harper. And I have to say it simply, some books won't let you stop reading them. You read them deep into the night saying, just one more chapter. And that's because the surprises in this book, State of Wonder, come so fast and thick that each chapter keeps you awake another 20 minutes, and then you want to read the following one. I couldn't stop. And this is so much more richly plotted. There are so many balls in the air in this book. What was the provocation?
Well, first, I want to say thank you. Thank you for having me back, and thank you for saying such nice things, especially about chapter shape, because it's something that I'm kind of obsessed with. And what you just described is what I always hope to achieve, which is the idea of someone sleepy in bed, reading, thinking, I'm just going to make it to the end. And then there's a little hook at the end and it makes you read the next chapter. So that's great. This book started with the idea of wanting to write a story about an adult student who meets her seminal teacher 20 years later. And the student has shaped her entire life in hopes of pleasing the teacher, being like the teacher, making the teacher happy. And the teacher, who has had thousands of students, doesn't remember this person at all.
This book takes this adult student into the jungle, and you haven't ever read a scarier jungle, even in reportage about Vietnam. This jungle is so thick with the strangest trees and the noisiest insects and the darkest darkness that you've ever seen. It's like the jungle into which Marlowe goes to find Kurtz in Conrad's The Heart of Darkness, except that this book has a comic side as well. We're going up the Amazon to find this teacher, yes, Dr. Swenson, Dr. Annick Swenson. We're going with a woman named Marina Singh, who studied with Dr. Swenson. And what is Dr. Swenson doing up the Amazon? Anne?
A long time ago, Dr. Swenson, when she was a student herself of Dr. Rapp, they discovered a tribe called the Lakashi, and the women in the Lakashi tribe maintain everlasting fertility. They have children until the time they die. And the way they pull this off is the women all gnaw on the bark of a tree. Of course, this tree only exists, it seems, in this one place in the Amazon. There's a special little moth that lays its eggs in the broken bark, and something about the eggs and the bark and the women and the saliva and the gnawing, they stay fertile forever. So Annick Swenson is trying to replicate this phenomenon in a drug that can be sold for big bucks by American pharmaceutical companies.
Yes. And so it's a novel that deals with themes of women. And is it good for a woman to be fertile into her 70s? Can a woman, in fact, morally, emotionally, physically, survive the strain? Is this dream come true really a dream come true? Would it be a dream come true if it were sold to American pharmaceutical companies? As it happens, the head of the pharmaceutical company is the fiancé of our Dr. Singh, and he's not a very attentive fiancé. We don't necessarily want her to come back bearing the fertility drug for this company, and there are all sorts of reasons to prevent it, including the fact that the doctor is a pure research kind of doctor. She doesn't want, she wants money from a corporation, but she doesn't want them to own her research. In other words, we're talking about the purities of art and science, huh?
Yes, absolutely. I will mention the fact that one of the many influences that figures into this book is Pinocchio. And we'll remember that Pinocchio wanted to never go to school and have candy and play pool all day. And then Pinocchio gets his wish, and it turns out to not be as much fun as he thought. And I think everlasting fertility is a little like that. We want to keep pushing our choices back. We want to have all of our options open, keep the doors open. But in fact, when you get exactly what you want, it doesn't look so great.
Now, so here we are in a book in which a doctor has disappeared up the Amazon, doesn't have a phone, doesn't make contact with the company that's financing her researches. A previous representative of the pharmaceutical company has gone down and disappeared, presumably is dead. We've got a mystery going on among a tribe. Who, am I right? Did you really name the tribe after your favorite breakfast cereal?
I love Kashi, doesn't everyone?
Yes, the Lakashi tribe are a very special tribe, but even linguists come around and report what?
Report that their language isn't worth studying. Basically, they're all the tribes in that area are connected, and the Lakashi language is not the most interesting example of the native languages in the area, and so they don't give them much of a clue. So there is very, very little verbal communication going on between the scientists who are studying them and the Lakashi who are putting up with the scientists.
It's so funny because although this language is not very interesting, the family of languages leads us to tribes that include cannibals and headhunters, people whose doing in the jungle is very dire. And we get to have the pleasure of a mixture of an H. Rider Haggard adventure, like she, and a novel that is on its peripheries. We get a picture of the author sticking out her tongue and having a good time with us, pulling our legs. Did you mean to write an adventure comedy or a comedy adventure? Because part of the book is very frightening.
Well, you know, I think I'm funny. I actually think all of my books are funny. And it's very rare that I meet someone who says, you know, I read your book and it was really funny. I mean, to me, Bel Canto is a hysterically funny book. And, you know, maybe once a year somebody will say, I laughed my way through that book. And this one is hopefully a little more blatantly funny. But it is that combination of sort of laughing and gasping, which I as a reader, you know, I find very invigorating.
I found it the case that the book was so inventive and the descriptions of the jungle so tirelessly frightening. Just think, we've got not only a tree that is chewed upon by an entire tribe, but that tree must be first fertilized itself by a tiny, if I remember, blue bug. Who, yes, laying an egg, but they're not quite sure if it's egg or excrement that
right.
makes...
I forgot that. You're right.
And so they all line up by the trees every morning to chew, and so eventually does our seeking through the jungle doctor, Marina Singh, who by now is not taking her anti-malarial medication. So we've got one of those comedies about what? Going native.
Oh, this is really a comedy about going native because, of course, her luggage is stolen not once but twice. And she finds herself in the little Lakashi sack dress, because all the Lakashi women basically wear maternity dresses all the time. There would be no point not to. She braids her hair like the Lakashi, and pretty soon she's blending in quite nicely. And she is chewing the tree bark, because the other scientists explained to her that's part of her responsibility as a scientist to participate in this grand experiment. And she becomes a little addicted to the tree bark, too. I mean, they are a bit lashed in place by something that they're getting, a little perk that they're getting out of the bark.
Yes, at the foot of the tree, some very strange flowers grow that are said to allow the natives in their rituals to see God.
Right.
So we know why she wants to take some of this bark home with her. In fact, she imagines chopping up an entire tree to bring it back with her and keep in her freezer for those moments when she can't cope.
That's right.
I'm talking to Ann Patchett. She's the author of State of Wonder. It's her most recent book. I honestly think that it's her best book, but she's well known for Bel Canto, The Magician's Assistant, Taft, the patron saint of liars, and now State of Wonder. Now, what is the State of Wonder?
I'll tell you, it's not a very sophisticated answer. It is, I did not have a title for this book. And I mean, we were 2 days away from printing up the galleys. I came up with 75 titles. Every day I came up with titles. And I would ask my best friend and my mother and my editor, and everybody would say, that's a horrible title. It's a horrible title. And at the 11th hour and 58th minute, I came up with State of Wonder. And I was thrilled. I was so relieved. For a minute, it was called Book of Wonder. And I said to my friend, okay, it's called Book of Wonder. She said, what does that mean? And I said, it means the character exists in a state of wonder. And she said, well then, idiot, why not just call it State of Wonder? And I said, okay, all right, that's a good idea.
Now, this novel really interrogates questions having to do with selflessness. And Marina is sacrificing her life, really, to go to a very dangerous place, to look for a disappeared colleague, and finding herself in the jaws, in the den of her ferocious graduate school medical teacher, the woman who made her quake, and in fact made her leave her field. It was so frightening to
yes.
serve this teacher. And this woman who sacrifices herself over and over and over again for the company, for the head of the company, for the quest. What is it that you're doing with the question of selflessness? What were you thinking about?
I was thinking actually about finding the truest core of yourself through giving things up, both materially and your perceptions of yourself, your perceptions of safety, being willing to take on other people's burdens instead of your own, and finding the true center of your life, almost in a Buddhist way. She becomes stronger and more condensed in herself the more she gives herself away.
And but what does that say to you? Because people say that it's been the role of women, that self-surrender has been the bane of woman for most of our culture's history. And here we have a tribe. The men get sick, but the women go on, not in control of, but rather a slave to a biological clock that knows no ceasing.
There Ooh, they that's are. Well said. I like that.
Yeah. Dragging around offspring well into their lives. What's your point of view?
Well, you know, we make choices, and somehow in this country, we forget that there is a choice, and you don't get to just leave all your options open forever. So if you decide that you want to be a doctor and you don't want to pursue a relationship and you want to be on your own through your 40s, then maybe you have made a choice about whether or not you're going to have children. So I think it's not that I'm passing judgment. It's not that I'm saying anything is right or wrong, but it seems like something that would be worth thinking about, worth talking about.
Very interesting, because I think that it's true. I had a friend, you know, a very adventurous and activist friend, a feminist friend, who said to me, Michael, certain things in the life of a woman are not considered. I don't think that abortion is necessarily a boon to us. I had one, and it destroyed my life for years. And no one told me that that would be the result. No one spoke to me about the emotional consequences. It was a choice. I made the choice, but I wanted to be fully responsible for the choice, and everyone spoke to me as if this was the center of a woman's rights.
But you know what? You could find a lot more women who would tell you that story and say, Michael, I had the baby. It seemed like it would be so cute and so much fun and such a lot of love. And no one told me, no one fully informed me of what it would be like to have to give so much up of myself. No one fully informed me of all of the heartbreak, along with the love, that was down the road for me. So it's the same story either way you pick.
Yes, okay. So what we've discovered is that life is a spectrum of impossible choices.
Yes, we've discovered that. Yes.
Yes. And what is a novel?
A record of those impossible choices?
Yes. A path down which we go with Ann Patchett, my guest, to discover that there's no escaping uncertainty, that there's no point at which you've made the right choice, because every choice branches out, like the Amazon in this book, into further and further sub-branches. That's plot for you.
That's exactly right and beautifully said, and I would hope in the future you would write my jacket copy, because you really are getting right to the point of this.
Now, you went down into the Amazon. Tell me about it.
Well, there was a beautiful, beautiful time in my life where there was a magical kingdom called Gourmet Magazine in existence, and I wrote for them for 10 years and loved those people, loved that magazine, and anything I was doing that I needed to research, I could call Gourmet Magazine and say, I'm working on a book about the Amazon. Will you send me to the Amazon? And it wasn't that I minded paying for things myself. It was that I could never figure out how to book a trip, how to find a boat, how to find the lodge. And they knew everything. So Gourmet Magazine paid me to go to the Amazon and do my research. And in exchange, I wrote an article about, you know, food or something, which was a funny story. They never ran. We were on a boat. It was a beautiful boat. It had 12 rooms. It was exactly the boat that I wanted. And I wrote the piece, and it was going to run the next summer, and they never ran it. And I called my editor. I said, that was such a good piece. Why didn't you run it? And he said, oh, didn't I tell you? Right after you got off the boat, the next group of tourists who were on the boat, it was taken over by pirates. And they put all of the tourists, they came in with machetes and guns and flaming torches, and they put the tourists on the shore and took the boat away with all their money and possessions and left those people in the jungle, and they were rescued. But he said, we couldn't recommend it as a tourist destination. after that. But anyway, I digress.
And that's what I really call a kill fee. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Ann Patchett, author most recently of State of Wonder. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Ann Patchett about her new book, State of Wonder, a novel that leads a woman character, a doctor, into the chaos of the Amazon jungle, but deeper still, into the chaos of sacrifice and human love. This woman is going to make the ultimate sacrifice, or at least what the pictures they call women's weepies call the ultimate sacrifice, that at the final pages of the book, the woman has discovered her true love and is willing, for the sake not just of science, but humanity and common courtesy, to sacrifice her love.
She has to make a choice. She has to make a choice. It is A or B, and she can't have both. And that is really the larger story of the book. You can have the child, you cannot have the child, but you can't have both.
It's a wonderful concept because, you know, we live at the end, in the spoils, in the bitter end of the decade of having it all. And
yes,
it was thought at one time that we could. We can have it all.
It's a terrible lie. It's a terrible lie. Because what's saying, and I think especially this is true for women, that you can have it all, what it means, the net effect, is that so often we feel like we are failures in everything we do. We don't feel like we're doing a good job as a mother, as a wife, as a friend, in our business world, in our professional lives, because we can have it all. That's what the message tells us. We come away thinking we haven't really done a terrific job in any area. Now, that said, I should come clean and say I don't have children. And it was a very conscious choice for me when I was very, very young. I thought, I can't have it all. I can either have a career or I can have a child. And I am choosing to have a career. And that was it. That was it.
Now, tell me, is that your opinion or have you come to believe that as a life truth?
It is a life truth about me, not about other people. I have known plenty of people who have pulled it off and have done a brilliant job. My best friend here in Nashville has absolutely pulled it off. Carol Shields. I mean, Carol Shields had like 5 kids, and she wrote some of the greatest fiction of our time. So there are plenty of women who can have it all. I just don't happen to be one of them. I think that one of my great geniuses, or my, I guess I should put that in the singular, my great genius is I am aware of my limitations. I know what I'm not capable of.
Now that we've figured out a number of things about the inside of this book, let's go back to one of its central characters, the, it seems, mad doctor, Dr. Annick Swenson. And you see, I think what we're meant to understand about this book is that this woman, who everyone thinks of as a mad woman, is in fact the book's most honest woman. And while I did find her very funny, she makes the characters in this book shiver, shake in their boots. They all fear her the way Kurtz is feared in The Heart of Darkness. but she seems eminently sensible.
Absolutely. Kurtz is crazy.
Yes.
She's clear. She's clear.
She knows what she wants.
Absolutely. And she can get there in a straight line. And I have a lot of admiration for her. I have to say, this is a character that I do really love.
I loved her, too. And it seemed quite an enjoyable thing to write a book in which the character who is the most correct, who sees most deeply into her own nature, is the character that people regard as the Hitler of the novel, the nightmare of the novel. What a writer's picnic.
That's really true. You know, this book, I wrote it so much more quickly than my other books. And I had so much more fun. I got up in the morning and I was really happy to go to work. And a lot of that had to do with the character of Dr. Swenson. It was really nice to just write somebody who called it exactly like she saw it and operated on her own self-knowledge.
Yes, what I love, the company, the drug company, keeps sending people, one after another, to find out what her progress is. And at one point, she turns around to look at all of them and says, "What do you think? I'm running a Hyatt?" And I just started laughing hilariously. Exactly. They want her to make a breakthrough in world science, and yet they all want to stand around and watch.
Publishing can be a little bit like that.
I thought you might say so.
Yes, yes. They want you to be the artist. They want you to go away and make a great piece of art, but they would also really like to come and visit, and they would like to see those pages, and they would like to know, you know,
could you
what's
make
your
a
projection?
Press tour? Could you travel from city to city? Would you mind posing for a picture? Would you do the advertising copy?
Stop. You're going to make me cry. You're speaking of my life.
I've been talking with Ann Patchett, author most recently of State of Wonder. Thank you, Ann, for joining me.
Thank you, Michael. It's been so wonderful to talk to you again.
You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm. You can podcast this program, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button on our media player at kcrw.com. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. And we're just read this. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
He's a bookworm, she's a bookworm, we are all bookworms. And we're just read this. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.